Back at it with you on Connecticut Today, Friday, November 6th, Election Week 2020, wrapping up a very busy and unsettled week. Steve Stafstrom, Bridgeport Democratic State Rep, called in the 3 o'clock hour to give his thoughts on the recently completed election cycle. Also adding to that, former Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso, who chimed in the 4 o'clock hour regarding past encounters he's had with some shady ballot practices in and about the city of Bridgeport. And one of the Republicans who won on Tuesday, a friend of the program, Tony Wong, Republican State Senator from Fairfield, checking in on the 5 o'clock hour. I started the show on Friday with my thoughts regarding President Trump's path forward, or lack thereof, after the Tuesday election. Hey, how are you? It's over. I've been thinking about this driving all around this morning as I'm getting some errands done, just running around, schlepping around, and thinking about everything going on with the election. It's over. And I know there are a lot of people listening to me right now. We're going to get angry when I say that. It is over. It's over. Now, why do we know it's over? Well, a few things here. Number one, Joe Biden plans a primetime address coming up later today, tonight, around 8 o'clock, give or take, whatever, where he and Kamala Harris are going to speak. Folks, it's over. They've been told it's over. The percentages are flipping in their way, and it's over. And again, we're still not seeing from the Trump campaign anything beyond, well, this is odd, or this shouldn't be. And you have these lawsuits being filed, and other than the one that allowed some of the observers in Philadelphia to get a little bit closer to about 6 feet away from people who were examining the ballots. Other than that one, which a judge okayed, none of these lawsuits are sticking. Why? Because even though there might be some funny business to some extent here and there, there is no hard, irrefutable evidence. There isn't. There just isn't. Now, before you call me up and jump up my backside or whatever, you have to understand something here. And if you want to call and scream at me, that's fine. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. What we're seeing right now with these voting adjustments and, you know, the recounts and the opening, not really a recount, there have been no recounts ordered. There may be one, but who knows. Remember, recounts cost money, too. And, you know, if a candidate wants a recount, it's several million bucks, so whatever. But you have to understand something. And before you get overly emotional about this, what we're seeing happening today in the aftermath of election night is precisely, I mean, we're in bullseye territory, is precisely what all the experts said was going to happen. Democrats and Republicans, look, and we talked about it on this show. We talked about this with numerous authors and experts I've had on, and me just reading you articles, you know, as we discuss things. What did the experts say? Because of the mail-in voting. And again, you can debate the mail-in voting. That's fine. That's a very valid thing. And we'll get into that in a little bit, too, today. Because we're going to go mostly open phones today, maybe one guest or two, but mostly open phones. And by the way, the governor is not, as far as I see, not due to address the state on COVID today. But due to the mail-in balloting, which everybody knew was going to happen, what did all of the experts say? Almost to a man and woman in some way, shape, or form. They said the result you get on election night is going to be far different than what you get in the next 2 or 3 days after that. And a lot of these experts that, you know, sometimes are wrong, like the pollsters, some of these people are right. And they all said Friday, Saturday is when we're going to know. And guess what? Today is Friday. Tomorrow is Saturday. The bottom line here is very simple, folks. They were right. Many of the conservative or Republican voters in this country, even in traditionally blue states, voted on Election Day. Not all of them, but the vast majority of them. I mean, I was seeing figures heading into the election that, 60-70% of Trump supporting votes were going to be cast on Election Day, and they were. And these experts also said that 60-70% of Biden votes or Democratic votes were going to be mailed in. And it looks like they were. So follow along here. So if on Election Day you have a 65-35 split, 65 Trump, 35 Biden. Okay, you say, well, that's pretty good. But wait a minute. All these mail-in ballots came earlier largely from Democrats. I mean, everybody knew this. And those votes were 65 Biden, 35 Trump. Guess what? You add them all up, it's a 50-50 election. See, that's what people aren't stopping to think of here. That the vast majority of the Biden votes were mailed in, and everybody knew that was going to happen. So you know what you get when you add everything up? A razor-thin election, just the way there was a razor-thin election to elect the president in 2016. Well, what happened now? It goes the other way. Now, is there some funny business with some of these ballots? I'm sure there is in some spots. But what is the evidence that you would use? I mean, remember, in 2000 with Bush Gore, we had a lot of evidence in Florida that some of these recounts and the way these ballots, the hanging chad, I mean, we had hard physical evidence that the Supreme Court said, nah, that's not good. And that's why, there were two votes in the Supreme Court. One said, you got to stop counting sometimes, and they stopped. And the other one said, you cannot just cherry pick and pick and choose which cities in Florida you want to recount. Remember that? Well, the Bush campaign. W's campaign said, we just want to recount this. And the Gore campaign said, well, no, how about we recount this and this? And the Supreme Court said, no, time out. You can't pick and choose here. You either recount all the state or you just stay with what you're doing now. But we don't see any evidence that I see that if you took it to court, it would be enough to have a judge or somebody invalidate ballots or an election. It's just not there. And what do I mean by that? You need to have somebody come to court with you and say, Your Honor, I'm willing to swear on a stack of Bibles and my mother's tombstone that I was part of a cabal here to rig the election. If you don't have that, you don't have anything. Or if there's, some post office worker who's willing to swear, with the threat of perjury charges against him if he's lying or she's lying, I was told to take these trays of ballots and throw them away or hide them. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you need. That's the kind of stuff you need for cases like this. Now, we'll get into so much more today, but the other thing you have to understand is, for 2022, the midterms in 2024, listen, if you're the Democratic Party now in some states in the country, are you going to want to walk away from mail-in balloting? Because it obviously, let's assume the vast majority of it is legitimate. That's the best turnout tool that Democrats have had in a while. Maybe a lot of their voters don't want to go to the polls. Maybe the mail-in thing, but it would work for Republicans too, right? So again, folks, listen, I, I, I know what the president, I know he's angry, I know his supporters are angry, but unless I see hard, irrefutable evidence that's going to stand a test in court, this is over. And the president and the Republicans can do far better on building on what they did for 4 years and what happened on Election Day as well. Always good to hear from this gentleman. Surprise here. Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Steve Stafstrom, I believe, is on the phone. Steve, how are you?
Hey, Paul. How are you?
What's going on?
Yeah, it's actually, I was in the car on the way back from Hartford and listening and figured I'd check in with you.
Sure. What do you got? What's on your mind? What do you think about all this that's unfolding and what happened Election Day Tuesday for the General Assembly and all that, Steve?
Yeah, so Paul, I was actually really interested on kind of your comments about where we go from here with Trump, and kind of how that ties in back here in Connecticut. And you know, I think you're right that in certain counties and certain states, it plays really well. But I don't think there's any denying that, at least here on the state level, kind of the negative impact Trump has had and is continuing to have on the GOP here in Connecticut.
Steve, I don't doubt that. In fact, I said in our election night coverage, and I don't know whether you've seen the crosstabs yet. I haven't. I'm sure a lot of Democratic votes here in this state, Steve, all the way back to 2016 and 2018, are repudiations of Donald Trump. I think you're 100% right.
Yeah, I think there's been a constant trend. I think it dates back before Trump, certainly here in Fairfield County, that we've seen a move by moderate Republicans away from the national party. And I think, you know, that's why you see the significant margins that the Democrats have racked up in the House and the Senate locally. But I think it's also the messaging. A lot of the Republicans this year ran kind of on the same messaging as Donald Trump. They ran on this law and order, you know, the Democrats hate cops and, you're not safe in your suburbs type message. And it just didn't work. It didn't resonate with voters.
As I always say, Steve, a Connecticut Republican is different than an Alabama Republican, which is different from an Illinois Republican, which is different from a California Republican and all that. Now, you folks in the General Assembly, you'll be back at it after the first of the year. So you called in. I got to put you on the spot on one thing, Steve. Yeah. I know you won't mind, though. You guys going to bring up tolls again?
So I don't know about tolls. I don't think that's towards the top of the agenda. I mean, we definitely are going to have to deal with the special transportation fund issue and the budget issue. I think our preference has never been to do tolls or raise the gas tax or borrow from the rainy day fund to pay for transportation improvements. It's always been that, you know, ideally there'll be a national infrastructure response bill that is long overdue for the state of Connecticut and, frankly, every other, particularly Northeast state. One of the things I'm most excited about from a Joe Biden presidency is here's a guy who has spent his life riding the rails, as it were, understands the Northeast corridor. And I'm hoping that even with a divided Senate, one of the things Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, and Joe Biden can agree on is we need to get America back to work. And one of the ways to do that is to invest in infrastructure. And if we get a significant influx of federal spending on infrastructure, then we can avoid even having to have any of those conversations about tolls or gas tax or anything else.
Now, Steve, I know when I say this, you may think I'm mentally deranged, but trust me, I am okay. I am a New York Jets fan. And I do look forward to the day, Steve, that I might be able to place a legal wager on gangrene here in the state of Connecticut. I know that would, you know, subject me to probably a mental health evaluation. But is that on the horizon as well, Steve? What about the sports gambling, increased gaming? Do we go with the Native American tribes? Do we invite another vendor in, maybe a vendor who has a focus on Bridgeport? What do you think happens come January?
Yeah, I think we do get something done on sports gaming this year. Frankly, part of the reason it's been held up is some of us here in the Bridgeport region were waiting to see how the casino conversation played itself out over the last couple of years. And now, obviously, with COVID and everything else, you know, the economy is not there necessarily to support large-scale gaming operations. So I think, you know, we are more willing to look at something more moderate and some sort of expansion of sports gaming, particularly if that involves something here in our region.
And, you know, finally, Steve, I have taken a lot of calls on that on the station here, as you might imagine. A lot of people, and you probably heard this, Steve, from your district, saying if we're going to do something in Bridgeport here with a casino or an entertainment complex, you know, let's go big as we can. Make Bridgeport a destination. Let's not have like a glorified slots parlor. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. And I've always believed that. I've always thought that, you know, as you know, I was the guy who kind of brought the bill out four mm-hmm. or 5 years ago in the middle of the night to start this conversation on the House floor. And, you know, I think the issue right now, though, is given the COVID realities and the market of where we are, you know, we need to figure out whether that's viable either in the short term or the midterm. You know, I just don't get the sense that folks are necessarily looking to crowd into mm-hmm. large-scale casino entertainment venues right now and what the timeline or horizon is on that.
Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Steve Stastrom, thanks for calling in. Steve, don't be a stranger. We're here, and good luck down the road, and we'll chat. Take it easy, Steve. Thanks.
Anytime. Take it easy, Paul.
Thanks, Steve. Steve Stastrom, Democratic State Rep. Here in Bridgeport, in the Bridgeport area. Very influential guy. Was talking about funny business with absentee ballots, and I get a call from former Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso, who's on the phone. Chris,
hey,
good
Paul.
Afternoon. Is there any synchronicity in this call?
There may be. You never know. I was going to put some air in my tire, and I heard you, so I said, all right, I'll pull over. But anyway,
yeah.
Paul, there are two laws. One is that in a nursing facility, like a convalescent mm-hmm. home, for example,
yeah.
the registrar of voters in that town is required with a representative of both parties to be present while those individuals are filling out their ballots.
Mm-hmm.
So they could actually go into the patient's room and the patient would fill them out with, again, witnesses there.
So you're saying, Chris, hold on. You're
yeah,
saying so
yeah.
are there preset days then? So do all these people meet on a certain day and we're going over to the, you know, St. Mary's home? Is that how it works?
Yeah, and in some cases, there may be more than one visit based on, you know, the request of absentees. So, you know, you may do it more than once. And then the registrar will go over with, again, a witness from each party. Now, if there's three parties running, then the third party has a right to have a witness as well. And they go into the facility, and the person actually executes the ballot in the presence of mm-hmm. the witnesses so that it's done fairly and there's no question. There's also a law that in a tenement building of 20 or more people, you know, okay. 20 residents living in a
yeah.
facility like a high rise, in that case, the candidates can request that the registrars go in and supervise the absentee ballot process. So there's two very clear laws that exist. Many times candidates aren't aware of that and they don't exercise those laws, but they do exist.
Are they, Chris?
Precisely for what you've said, that or what the woman thought,
yeah.
you know, elderly are abused. There's no question about it. And mm-hmm. they could be easily abused when it comes to the ballot. I had one, I'll give you one quick story.
Sure.
I was running for a town committee in Bridgeport, and one of my opponents knocked on a woman's house that had received an absentee ballot.
Mm-hmm.
This person knew the resident very well. She said, your husband hasn't filled out his ballot yet. And the woman said, well, you know, my husband, right after dinner, we're going to do that. Her husband happened to be physically disabled, so he couldn't move. He was
yeah.
in kind of a recliner chair. She pushes the woman aside, goes into the living room, has the resident fill it out, and then she takes and walks out with the ballot. So I'm going to give you a quick story. So I said, the woman called me up. She's quite upset. She said,
yeah.
Mr. Caruso, what should you do? I said, well, man, that's a violation of law. You've got to, you know, put a claim in that the law was violated. She said, oh, I don't know that. I know this woman so well. So I said, okay, well, think it over. Guess what happens? The next day she calls me and she said, Mr. Cruz, I'm going to do it. I said, what happened? She said, my son's an FBI agent and he told me I had to enforce the law.
Good.
Okay? And, and that individual was barred from running for office. From that particular office in the future, and also was fined $5,000. So there are cases where you catch these people, and they could be hit pretty hard for violating the law.
Wow. Chris, thank you. That's great stuff. Chris Caruso, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Boy, that's interesting. So, yeah, there's, and as Chris pointed out, there are, you know, there are election laws. You know, there's no money involved, usually. I'm not saying anything. Well, you know. But, boy, that story he just told. How about that, huh? Boy, this is why. People have approached me over the years. Run for this, run for that. I said, if I knew that stuff was happening, I'd be apoplectic. And I know I've heard from working on campaigns and talking to politicians for years, well, you know, there's a certain amount of it that you won't be able to sniff out because, you know, it goes on all the time. But, man, that would just gall the garbage out of me. It really would. It really would. Night that, frankly, wasn't great for the state Republican Party, but they sally on. Republican Tony Wong joins us. Tony, congratulations on your win, which I guess, Tony, at the speed these ballots come in, and who knows about provisional ballots and absentee ballots, wasn't in the bag right away, correct?
Well, you know, thank you, Paul. I'm always happy to hang out with you like Eric is, and it was. It was really delayed, and even though I might have been very on pins and needles, there's nothing compared to what's going on the federal U.S. president campaign issue.
Yeah.
I'm always an optimist, Paul. I'll tell you, the voter turnout was positively remarkable. I mean, I want to give kudos to the voters that came out to vote, and during this COVID environment, I waited an hour plus in line.
Wow,
to vote.
Wow.
And I do believe that no excuse absentee voting may be here to stay. And kudos must be given to the voters and the people that came out, but also to our local town clerks, register voters, all the volunteer moderators at the polling location. It was a very well-run operation in very extenuating circumstances. So they deserve a lot of credit. But I have to tell you, Paul, there were many execution issues with regards to the Secretary of State's office. They did not give appropriate direction, support, funding, and training to our hardworking local officials, and they put them very much at risk and discomfort. And that's part of the reason why so many voting results were delayed. I did not get an official confirmation on over 7,000 absentee ballot data points until 7 o'clock in the morning because they weren't given good support on a local level and they were at risk of liability, whereas the Secretary of State's office didn't give any direction. She may have taken credit for the great turnout, but she did very little in the effort and the hard work that was proven by the local level. And that's the problem we have, is the fact that I didn't get my data, and most of the news media only had 5% reporting on my data point.
Yes,
up
Tony,
until
I was
3 a.m. in the morning.
I kept, you know, I was on ICC with Melissa till midnight, then I did an extra hour by myself. So I'm driving home, I found an all-night spot, got something to eat, came home, and I'm looking, and I keep refreshing, right? I'm going, oh, come on, and I was looking at your race and the others going, how is this possible? You know, 5%. I mean, Tony, you and I grew up, right, when we still had the machines, right? You know, we still had the voting machines, the big curtain, and then at the end of the night, the poll workers would go to the back of the machine, Tony, remember, and they'd write down the numbers. And I've covered election nights, you know, Tony, and I've covered, you know, congressional races, state house, state senate. By 11 o'clock, everybody was hitting the bar because you know who won.
You knew the numbers. This has been a steady challenge. And the 5% were from Westport and Weston that voted over 75% for Biden. And I still made a contention in that. And then they were reporting the 5%. I had won Fairfield. I had won Easton. And I overwhelmingly, well, in this environment, won Newtown Sandy Hook. So
wow.
Those data never got reported, and I knew the numbers, but because our local authorities didn't get the support from our Secretary of State's office, they couldn't put themselves on the line, and so nobody got data. It was infuriating for so many people. And Paul, I had to tell you, many people were hesitant to reach out to me because they thought, oh my gosh, these are incredible numbers that you have to overcome. We hope you didn't lose. Our hearts go out to you. And I'm like, no, I knew the numbers, but no one could officially validate them because the Secretary of State had to do it in this election cycle.
You know, Tony, we always hear about how smart people are here in Connecticut. Oh, the governor and everybody on down to both parties. We have some of the smartest people on the planet. And we do, between Yale and UConn and Quinnipiac and Wesleyan and Sacred Heart and UB. But the simplest things, Tony, sometimes how many votes went for somebody, you know, you're banging your head on the wall and wondering, did we really land a man on the moon 51 years ago? Why can't we get simple stuff like, you know, again, Tony, you and I are old enough to remember, you know, the chalkboard election tallies used to work pretty well.
Well, that was the frustration, right? And that's why I said, thank the voters who came out in record numbers to vote. Thank all of our local workers that worked so hard. But when Denise Merrill gets out first thing on Wednesday morning and say, what incredible program I implemented to get voter turnout, but gave no support for the hardworking people to get the real numbers out, I found that absolutely disappointing. So, but a lot of people, not just me, Paul, there were many people that had unofficial data points.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Had to wait for absentee ballot validation that could have turned the tide. And it's really frustrating. And you're right. It's 2020, and I know that no excuse absentee ballot may be here to stay. But before we discuss it, we've got to get the execution down.
Yes.
Because it's
yes.
frustrating, and when you have delays like this, it's nail biting, but it also creates uncertainty for many
Absolutely.
People.
Tony, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Yeah, Tony Wong is the guest reelected to a state senate seat. We'll talk about what's coming up. But yeah, I mean, folks, it does appear that, you know, by what Tony said and by what I'm reading here, absentee ballot, you know, or no excuse absentees or ballot by mail, however you want to put it, it's probably going to be here. But let's hope the General Assembly, you know, turns the screws on Secretary Merrill a bit to say, hey, listen, this worked. Let's polish it up. Let's tighten it up. You know, as football coaches tell you, after every you know, post-game news conference on Sunday or Monday, let's look at the tape and clean up what we did bad. Back with Tony straight ahead, coming up on 5:16, traffic and weather together, and then open phones as we continue with a few more questions for Tony Wong. As we look ahead now, what happens with the General Assembly in Hartford again, you know, turn of the year? We're going to have another General Assembly session, a few fewer Republicans up there, but we'll talk about a key point in the headcount that still may hamstring Democrats a bit. 5:16, traffic and weather together on WICC. All right, a couple of minutes before we hit the news, bottom of the hour, Republican State Senator Tony Wong of Fairfield on the line, friend of the radio station, just reelected. Well, Tony, not only were you reelected, our buddy Kevin Kelly is now your new Senate Minority Leader, the Senate Caucus Leader. You guys in the Senate, guys and gals, Tony, are down a little. It went from 22 to 14 to 24 to 12. Now, Tony, I just wanted to check with you. In the House, even though the Republicans lost 7 seats, am I correct in assuming, by what I read, Tony, that there is still not enough of a Democratic majority in the House to override any possible vetoes from Governor Lamont? Am I correct in that?
Absolutely. And by the whopping margin of one vote.
Wow, it's that close?
It is that close. And the House will have a veto protection. Unfortunately, the Senate will not. And it seems it's important to note that literally 4 years ago, it was 1818.
Yeah,
you can see
yeah.
the impact. But look, right now we will have one-party rule, Paul. The Democrats will control the executive branch. They control both chambers in the House and the Senate with a significant majority. And it's a real challenge to govern in these very challenging situations. And some of the major issues that the new majority, the Democratic majority, are addressing in the latest press conference they had yesterday is a big of a concern. You know, in this COVID environment, the new speaker, Matt Ritter, who's an absolutely fabulous person, and the first two things he's talking about is about marijuana legalization and possibly the early voting issue, instead of addressing issues that the COVID epidemic has caused in regards to economics, a possible recession, a possible record deficit again.
Tony, what about
dynamics? These are
what about tolls?
They should have been addressed.
What about tolls? I don't think tolls are dead. I had one of your buddies, Steve Stafstrom, on the show earlier today who called in, good of him, and he said, listen, they're going to look at everything. You know, there are revenue issues. Will there be a push, Tony, you think, for tolls again once we get into the new year?
Well, you know, the new speaker, Matt Ritter, said toll has already been discussed last year. The jury has ruled, and we're not going to address the issue. But I got to tell you, I won't believe it until I see the session end without polls and additional taxes on our commuters and road users. You can call it a user fee. You can call it a toll. You can call it whatever you want, but it's another tax on people. The bottom line is, Paul, I'm concerned about the direction in regards to the focus that needs to be addressed mm-hmm. in this upcoming session. The issues of marijuana legalization, it is important, and all the other issues that was raised by the new speaker. But it seems to be very tone deaf to what is crucial right now, that is, in the COVID environment, to ensure that the standards are there to protect people, but also the economic havoc that it's caused on our businesses. What the governor just did by his executive order without any input from legislators and crucial shareholders like restaurants and businesses is mm-hmm. another example why we need to be a voice as legislators representing the community. What the governor just did by an executive order without any input was create devastating havoc on our restaurants and businesses without any notice. And I know it's a concern on a public health consideration, but you got to get input from people whose lives and businesses and economic fortunes will be dictated by a executive branch that has no input. So I know we're in a COVID environment, but the legislator has to get to work to represent the people. Because yeah. without that voice, the people's voice are not heard. And you're already hearing that from people is, you're going to put a curfew on for me from 9:30, from 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock a.m.? You know, wait a second. When did all of my liberties get taken away at the beswitch of greater public safety? There mm-hmm. has to be a balance. And if we're going to rule by one-party rule, then you're going to have to answer and give explanations and face the brunt of these decisions if they're not the right ones.
And Tony, the reason finally I brought up the, now you tell me it's just a one vote by a sliver there. So the governor, if that margin of just one vote, Tony, in the House for the Democrats holds up, the governor barely does hold on to the power. Then if he tries to exercise a little bit of maybe fiscal constraint, fiscal responsibility, maybe dealing this July with the state employees unions, he still does retain that power, even if it may rub the majority in the House the wrong way, maybe.
Well, Paul, here's the deal. We should represent the people who elected us, not a party label. So the reality of how tolls died last session was because Democrats and Republicans both said no. We need to have Democrats, step up and say bad policies are bad policies, whether they're Democratic or anybody else's ideas. We shouldn't rule by partisan politics. Bottom line, you're elected to represent the people that may have different viewpoints. But again, with this one-party rule that currently exists in the upcoming legislature, and if the national presidential decisions hold, you're no longer able to blame Donald Trump anymore. The bottom line, there's going to be accountability. And if you increase taxes and you don't explain where the money is going, you're going to have to answer to the people you represent. One-party rule doesn't work because it doesn't bring forth dissenting viewpoints, dissenting ideas that may make things better.
Tony, thank you as always. We'll be in touch. Have a good weekend and we'll chat. Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Tony Wong, reelected the Senate seat covering portions of Fairfield. Tony now one of only 12 state Senate Republican members. Listen, the people speak. They elect who they want to speak, who they want to as they speak. But the Republicans losing some seats in the last few terms. And, you know, people will say, as Tony pointed out, well, you can't ascribe non-Republican voting in the state anymore because you don't like Donald Trump. As I've always said for the past 2 or 4 years, wherever I'm doing this stuff, don't let your hatred or your happy thoughts for somebody in D.C. affect how you vote for somebody that affects your life or your lives far more just a few miles away in Hartford.